You'll remember that Ziggy, and it's almost the end of September, so chances are he'll have a new team in a couple of days. But for the month of September, he's been a Baltimore Ravens fan.
For the year.
For the year. And now you're holding up your Ray Lewis Ravens jersey on FaceTime at home in your studio. Good for you. This should be a great one tonight. Is there any way you can handicap who's got an edge here?
Yes, I can. First of all, Ziggy, good choice. It's probably because you heard me make the Ravens my number one ranked team in my power rankings on the Ross Tucker podcast, because they deserve it. And by the way, if you really do have that Ray Lewis jersey, remind me to tell you a story sometime, because he's the best player I ever played against in my whole life. 18 years of playing football, 7 in the NFL, Ray Lewis was the best football player I've ever played against. Tonight, I think I like the Ravens. I would not be surprised if the Ravens win by double digits. The thing that gives me hesitation there is obviously Patrick Mahomes, and he's unbelievable. He's a magician. I just think the Ravens are nasty right now. I think the Ravens are going to run the ball down the Chiefs' throat. It's so hard to plan for what the Ravens do. It's almost like, you know, I do the Army games on CBS Sports Network, you know, Army College Football, and it's so hard to practice and prep for going against Army and that triple option. There's a lot of triple option tendencies with what the Ravens are doing, and they're just putting teams in an absolute bind. They don't know who has the ball. They haven't seen some of these blocking schemes before. And then, by the way, they're good. It's Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins, and they're good. I like the Ravens quite a bit tonight. I think the Ravens are the best team in football by a decent amount. Good choice, Ziggy.
I want to hear this Ray Lewis story.
Give it. Yeah. We know Ray Lewis was great, but we obviously never went up against him. I mean, what did he do that made him such a challenge?
Well, so when people think of Ray Lewis, right, they think how big he was, how fast he was, how ferocious he was, you know, the dance coming out of the end zone. I started at center in 2004 for the Bills down there in Baltimore. And during the week, I could tell with the blocking scheme, I was going to have to block Ray a lot in that game. And I remember one of the practice squad guys was like, "Tuck, you got to block Ray like the whole game." And I was like, "Yeah, so what? Like, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to get famous. It's going to be awesome." Guys, that's not what happened in the actual game, unfortunately. So first of all, never played against a guy in my whole life that knew what play was coming as often as he did. And this is what I tell young people. Like, based on our formation and our motion, he would call out what we were running about half the time. And, like, there were plays where, like, let's say it was a sweep to the right. I was responsible for Ray Lewis. I come off to the side, and the offensive line coach is like, "Tuck, you got to get Ray." And I'm like, "Let me see the Polaroid." That's back when they would take a Polaroid picture, like, right before the snap, right after the snap. You know, like, you'd look at the pictures on the sideline. When I snapped the ball, Ray Lewis was a yard off the line of scrimmage outside the tight end.
Ooh.
I said, "You guys better call a different formation or a different play or something." And he's like, "Oh, shoot. Yeah. Okay, sorry." I mean, it was the amount of prep work he must have done during the week to know what we were running so often. It was incredible. And then, guys, even when I did try to block him, okay, every time I went up to him, he would hit me with the hard part of his hands right on my shoulder points, like the butt of his hand, the bottom of your hand. He would hit me right on my shoulder points, lock me out, and then toss me aside and make the tackle. It's called the butt and shed technique. He had the best technique of anybody I've ever gone against. And to the point where Willis McGahee, our running back, was like, "Tuck, maybe just try to cut them or something," which is when you dive at their knees, essentially, and try to take out their knees. I tell this story all the time. In any walk of life, okay, any walk of life, everybody listening, doesn't have nothing to do with football. The things that made Ray Lewis the best player I ever went against, that technique, that's just the amount of time that he spent on perfecting that technique all off season. And then knowing what play was coming, that's the amount of time that he spent that week studying our offense. The separation is in the preparation, and Ray Lewis, those are the two things that made him unbelievable. And by the way, none of those two things take any talent whatsoever. So I think it's just a great – and by the way, he still was big and fast and strong and all that stuff. But that's not what made him unbelievable, is the two things I just told you, his technique and his preparation.
Yeah, he was scary. Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine going up against him.
Yeah, and he was
– yeah, well, I mean, at least I got some good stories out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, and those Ravens defenses in the years – I mean, his career was more or less bookended, not quite, but – kind of sort of by Super Bowl championships like that, and some of the players he played with, the Terrell Suggs and the Ed Reeds, and like, yeah,
I love the defensive side of the game. But is the game not changing now, Ross, where it's like it's all offense and the rules are geared towards higher scoring games?
Yeah, I mean, it's been that way for a while. They know that that's what most fans like. They know that fantasy football is a big driver of revenue. Most people don't like a 10-7 game. They just don't. I mean, you know, there's some old school people that will say they do, but they really don't. They'd say it's boring or whatever. Probably has something to do with our attention spans these days. But yeah, I think the big thing I noticed this year, they're hardly ever calling offensive holding. It's hilarious. Like, I mean, maybe if I was still playing, I could have been better. I got called for holding all the time when I played. But now they're not calling offensive holding on anybody. And a point of emphasis, even more so this year, is illegal contact. I think we actually saw that in the Buffalo Rams game. I didn't agree with them calling it pass interference on that last fourth down. I actually thought the call should have been illegal contact, which – you know, because I work for CBS, I was on the NFL rules officiating seminar, and illegal contact is a huge point of emphasis. And that guy was definitely still engaged, still had him more than 5 yards down the field in my mind.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's where I wanted you to take us through that particular play. You can jam a guy up at the line of scrimmage and stay with him in contact for 5 yards, Ross. But beyond that, you've got to let him go.
Correct. You can't ride him. You can't bump him. You can't do anything. And it was more than 5 yards, and he was still holding on. I think they confused the issue by calling it pass interference. They should have called it illegal contact. It would have been the same difference. And that illegal contact was the right call. I mean, the Rams are right. It wasn't pass interference. It was illegal contact.
Which is still a first down, still a 5 yard penalty, or half the distance to the goal if you're far enough down there.
Right. It ends up being essentially the same thing. Right. They get another snap.
Yeah, because pass interference is a spot foul, but it effectively happened 5 yards down the field. So one way or the other, they're moving up 5 yards. What did you make of the, and it obviously didn't end up hurting the Bills in the end because they came back and won the game in part because of that DPI on the final drive. But what did you make of the contested interception and the fact that, to use the baseball terminology of the tie going to the runner, the Rams were awarded the INT?
I'm trying to think which game you're talking about.
No, but Rams and Bills. Josh Allen threw a contested ball up, and both guys kind of caught it at the same time. And the Rams were awarded the interception. Bills fans were on fire about that on Twitter.
Oh, man, that's so interesting because I'm sure you saw, but the Bears scored a touchdown against the Falcons. Allen Robinson in the end zone, same thing. And then they overturned it. Because it was a touchdown in the end zone. They called touchdown Allen Robinson. Both guys had it. Then upon review, they overturned it. So even more, it wasn't about, you know, the tie going to the offensive player. I didn't even know there was one in the Bills-Rams
game.
Well,
yeah, and it contributed, Ross, to the Rams' comeback, right? Because it was 28-3 Buffalo, and they started to close that gap pretty quickly, in part because of that contested turnover. Or controversial.
Well, that's really interesting. I'll have to check that one out. But yes, I mean, it is supposed to be, if it's true dual possession, it's supposed to go to the offense. But I guess pretty clearly they didn't think it was true dual possession.
And in a league that is skewing toward the offense, to the conversation you and Ziggy were having earlier, it's interesting that the defense has come away with the advantage there. But a big win for Buffalo. Josh Allen, especially in the first half, looked very, very good. They're 3-0. My thought on it, and beating the Rams is far different than winning at home against the Jets or going down to Miami and beating the Dolphins. The Rams are a good team, but they're an out-of-conference team. I think we have to hold up, and perhaps this is a reputation preceding them situation on both counts, Ross, but I think we have to hold up on how we truly feel about the Bills until we get to see them play the Patriots.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big measuring stick. I'll actually be up there in a couple weeks when they play the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football on October 15th. I'll be calling that game for Westwood One. So whether it's when they play the Patriots, or I don't know if they play the Ravens this year, they probably don't, but when they play the Patriots as well as the Chiefs, those will be real good measuring sticks for the Bills. Well, you know, obviously, I feel pretty good about them already, especially beating the Rams the way that they did, because I think that's a really good Rams team. But we'll know even more, obviously, over the next couple weeks.
What do you think of when you see Josh Allen, you know, rifle off 4 TDs in a row, and then all of a sudden just kind of vanishes? What do you, as a former player, what are guys on the team thinking?
I think at this point they just kind of know that that's him. They love him. He's not perfect, but he still put up 32 points. He made some tremendous throws, tremendous plays. He's very tough, incredibly entertaining. I think they're just thinking they're glad he's their quarterback. And he's still young, and he's still, you know, there's highs and lows with him, but with every passing year, with every passing game, there's more highs than lows. You know, he's putting the ledger more and more to his side every week.
Ross Tucker is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Vikings lose ultimately to Tennessee, and Atlanta becomes the first team in NFL history to lose 2 games in the same season in which they had a 15-point or more lead in the fourth quarter. And oh, by the way, they happen to have done it in back-to-back weeks. I know we're not yet a quarter of the way through the season, Ross, but Kirk Cousins is entrenched in Minnesota. Matt Ryan is entrenched in Atlanta. If either of those two teams happen to be one of the clubs that has, say, the top overall pick, or a pick in the top 2 or the top 3, would they consider, whether it's Trevor Lawrence or one of the other stout college quarterbacks who are draft eligible in 2021, would they consider taking them and moving on sooner rather than later from the incumbents?
It's an interesting question. I don't think either one of those teams will end up having one of the top 2 or 3 picks. I think that when you watch like the Jets and the Giants, some of these other teams play football, Washington, it's hard to imagine that Minnesota and Atlanta will actually be in those situations because of the guys you just mentioned, Kirk Cousins and Matt Ryan. Yeah, I still think those teams will end up winning 5, 6 games, maybe even 7, and not be in that position. If they were in that position, I do think that they would consider it just because of the fact that maybe then they could trade the older quarterback, especially if they're going to do a whole regime change, which I think is what's going to happen in Atlanta. I mean, I think Atlanta is going to probably clean house, so they might really consider it. I think probably more so than Minnesota would.
Okay, and so then very quickly, I would assume that you would be a yes to the Giants or the Jets taking the successor to Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold.
I think the Jets are probably like a 95% yes, and I'd say the Giants are probably about 50-50 right now. You know, it's only year 2 for Daniel Jones. It's year 3 for Darnold. That's a big difference in my mind. So I'd say the Giants are 50-50, and they'll let it play out, and maybe they'll get their Kyler Murray instead of Josh Rosen. It could be that kind of situation.
All right, and last one for you. I saw your tweet when I woke up this morning. Green Bay at New Orleans last night. You're saying, yeah, everybody's talking about Drew Brees and whether age is catching up to him. You don't like New Orleans' defense.
No, they've been terrible. I mean, the Bucs moved the ball up and down on them. If it wasn't for the 2 picks by Brady. They would have lost that game. The Raiders moved the ball up and down on them. I don't even really remember the Packers punting last night. I mean, it's really bad. I mean, they've been legitimately terrible on defense. It's kind of hard to figure. They've got a lot of good players on that side of the ball, but they're not playing well. Much bigger problem than Brees. I mean, Brees was like, what, 29 out of 34 for 286 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. Like, and without Michael Thomas, Brees is not the problem.
We'll leave it there, my friend. Let us know where we can find you. Obviously, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast is in the can for the day, so we can hear you there. What else you got going on?
Yeah, so at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, on social, if you want to get my comments on things while I'm watching the game tonight, Ravens and Chiefs. And, of course, you mentioned it, that not only the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, but I've got the Fantasy Feast Podcast if you need fantasy advice, and I've got the Even Money Podcast if you like to place wagers on the game. So check them all out at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found. I really appreciate it.